Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling. Like, you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO Podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Tonight, I'm joined by Grant Levac, and Grant is actually a returning guest to the podcast. Grant appeared on one of our live shows. So if you don't know what our live shows are, we do those twice a month on our Facebook and YouTube pages. So if you don't like those, make sure you head over there. But essentially, I want to get Grant on because Grant is basically one of my go-to guys on the internet to find out about what's really happening in the world of UFOs. And the great thing about Grant is that he is a true blue Aussie. He is located here and he actually busts his ass to get as much information out into the public. And he asks some really good and really tough questions. Like, this guy is the bulldog in the fight. He is not scared of anyone. And he's not really scared of the no response from people. You know, he kind of goes out of his way to ask those difficult questions. And for me, that like really gets a lot of credence from me because I think that's the best thing you can do. So I want to get him on, and I've got him on tonight to kind of talk about the recent happenings of UFOs, I guess, news in the world, but also what goes on in Australia, because Australia seems to be one of these, I guess, countries that kind of gets forgotten about in the world of UFOs. And, you know, we have one of the world's best reporters and in Australia, Ross Coulthart, kind of leading the UFO flag for disclosure. And we seem to be one of the most quiet countries about UFO disclosure in the entire world, which is just it's so puzzling. So, Grant, welcome back to the podcast, mate.
It's good to be with you, Kay. Thanks for having me back on. It's great to be able to share some insights with your audience again. So thanks for having me.
Mate, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. And I'm not kind of like trying to fluff you up or anything, but that's the genuine truth of everything I said there. Like, I think you really do a fantastic job because you take it to absolutely everybody that you want to find out any information about. You just go straight in.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I guess that you know, curiosity in me and you know, the drive to always push for answers that remain, you know, to questions that get passed over by, you know, people in government or Department of Defense. It's my driving force to, you know, get answers to questions that I find interesting and I take seriously. And I think a lot of other people do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're one of these guys who is like also boots on the ground. You know, you're not just a keyboard kind of warrior in the sense of trying to find out all the information that way. You actually go out and you kind of talk to the people because, you know, you just recently did like I would say not a mini doco, but you did a proper doco on Westall. And, you know, you went there for their anniversary and kind of chatted to people and really got some good conversations out of that.
Yeah, look, it was great, and you know, credit to Shane Ryan, who's been the lead researcher on Westall for many, many years. I connected with him, and he told me about this annual reunion event that the Westall Witnesses have, and obviously throughout COVID, it kind of put it on a hiatus. But there was one scheduled for April of this year, and living in Melbourne now, I'm originally from Sydney, but living in Melbourne, I thought, I've always been interested to learn a lot more about Westall because I didn't really know a whole lot other than just the bare bones basics. And so I went out there on the day of the reunion event and met, it was a relatively small number of primary witnesses, and introduced myself, told them who I am and what, you know, what I've been doing to date on the topic, and asked them if they would be happy to go on camera with any questions that I wanted to throw the way. And they were really, really gracious and generous of their time. You know, I wanted to capture them sharing their recollections and recounting their, you know, their memories of that day, the 6th of April, 1966, in a long form, unedited fashion. So I ended up putting out a documentary that was probably about just shy of 90 minutes. I think an hour and 15 or an hour and 10. I can't quite remember, but, you know, capturing just a lot of commentary and testimony from these witnesses to questions that I had. So it was it's such a fascinating event, the Westall incident. And it's so frustrating because 57 years later, there's still no official explanation or any government record as to what Westall was or what Westall wasn't. And I know there were a lot of good folks like Shane Ryan and Bill Chalker and Keith Basterfield done a lot of work on trying to find answers through Freedom of Information Act and National Archives of Australia. And it's just one of those unresolved cold cases of this modern era. It's still a mystery.
Yeah, it's something that I'm absolutely fascinated with, and I'm so tempted to go down the rabbit hole and just do almost like a micro little doco on the whole thing, but do it in a podcast form and kind of just really, really break it down and, you know, maybe do like 5 or 6 episodes on it. But I know once I go down that rabbit hole, they're so hard to come out of. So,
I totally agree with you. And Westall is exactly that. There are so many rabbit holes, and so I deliberately I made a deliberate choice to just stay focused on the story or the recollections of these select small number of witnesses that I interviewed on the day. Because there was several hundred children that saw something on the 6th of April, 1966, and a few school teachers as well, and other people of the general public as well. And so I just focused on the recollections of these very small number of primary witnesses and kept the focus of the documentary kind of aligned to their recollections only. But yeah, to your point, there are just so many other rabbit holes you can run down on the Westall incident. It's such a fascinating one, and I think one day I'll probably pick Shane Ryan's brain again on other facets of it that I'm keen to explore. So, yeah,
no, and hats off to you, mate, because it's really difficult to you want to chase that road wherever it goes, and you know you've got to put a point to it, and you know for you, I think you did an excellent job.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Oh, mate, no worries at all. You know, credit where credit's due when it comes to this type of thing, because, you know, there's not a huge amount of guys out there kind of doing what you do. And I genuinely believe, like, when someone does a good job about this stuff, you got to let them know, because not that you want or need that type of, like, uplift to keep doing what you're doing, but it lets you know that you're doing the right thing, I think.
Yeah, and look, you know, the positive feedback that I've received from other folks that have, it was really wonderful to receive, you know, some positive feedback from Shane Ryan, because I really respect the work that he's done on the Westall incident, and just other folks that have watched the documentary and really, you know, value the content and hearing from the witnesses directly and giving them an opportunity to speak in a long form format. So, yeah, it is really, you know, it's nice to hear those positive comments, and it does, you know, provide some motivation, inspiration to kind of keep going and explore other topics as well. So, you know, that's not just obviously on the Westall side, but my kind of driving force to date, which is to better understand Australia's involvement, or rather the lack thereof, in the UAP topic. So it's always nice to know there are people out there that that value the work that I've been doing and try to chase down answers to questions that I'm interested to pursue.
Yeah, and I guess that's really the whole point I've got you on tonight, is to kind of talk about you know, Australia's response to what this UFO phenomenon is, because, you know, like I said in the intro there, Australia seems to be, you know, three or four steps behind absolutely everyone else, apart from maybe Mexico, with the disaster of their Congress that kind of went on there. And I need to get your opinion on, like, what happened there, because my goodness, those things that they're not aliens, like they can't be, from what I've learned about them. My gosh, just a total disaster in motion.
Well, it was certainly unexpected. I don't think anyone saw that coming, other than those that, you know, maybe knew that it was planned. And I mean, the one thing that was unfortunate about the Mexico conference or congressional event was that it wasn't readily available in translated form. So you kind of had to either use a translation service, or there were a couple of podcasts that were maybe translating sections of it. So I didn't have a chance to, you know, watch it in its entirety, because not the whole, you know, I didn't find anyone that had provided an entire translation of the whole event. But I was very, very interested to hear from Dr. Avi, you know, Professor Avi Loeb, and Ryan Graves. You know, yep. He was there in person. So it was just, when I first heard about the Mexican conference or congressional event, and that it popped up that Jaime Musan was involved in the preparation of it, or he was one of the driving forces behind it, it kind of raised a red flag for me, because, you know, he has a bit of a checkered past in pushing questionable you know, footage and yeah. documentation, and you know, there have been some hoaxes that have been easily identified that he's been a part of. So that when I kind of discovered that, and hearing from folks on social media, it kind of raised a bit of an alarm bell for me. And it was just unfortunate that, you know, Ryan Graves, who I have really the greatest of respect for, I think his intentions were genuine, that he wanted to go along and highlight to, you know, the Mexican delegation, you know, really hit home that UAP is a real clear and present danger in terms of safety of flight. And the work that he's doing with several others for the Americans for Safer Aerospace, I think is a really great initiative. And, you know, I applaud him for his efforts to kind of elevate the conversation on that front in front of the Mexican delegation. But then, you know, to have kind of a stunt like that pulled at the very end, where these, you know, purported bodies were pulled out on stage and paraded around the stage in front of the world, I just cringed and thought, oh, I mean, you know, if number one, I don't think that's the appropriate forum to reveal something of that nature to the world. I mean, yeah. if you've got evidence like that, well, all right, show us the peer-reviewed analysis and the peer-reviewed science first, before you then go out and you have a press conference or something that's, you know, going to reach a mass audience. So I think the way that they went about it was, I don't think it helped. You know, we've worked so hard to break down the walls of stigma and ridicule on this topic, and I think for a lot of folks, it just put those walls straight back up, because a lot of people saw it as, oh, this is just so ridiculous. And, you know, I think the way in which it was done did not help the conversation and did not help the topic. I still think there is value in, you know, okay, if they're saying that they've done analysis and they've done, you know, scientific examination of, you know, the bodies and analyzed the bone composition and structures, great, get all that information peer-reviewed and then come back to the scientific and academic community and the general public and produce your findings. But to my knowledge, there's no peer-reviewed analysis that's been conducted at this point. So.
No, not at all. And the only other kind of review of these bodies that I saw were done by the same gentleman who originally presented them. So, and again, it was very theatrical how they went about it. You know, they basically had like 20 professionals basically crowded around an MRI machine and was, you know, it was an echo chamber. And that does no favors for what this is, you know. And I totally agree with you. You know, I really feel like, you know, everything that really just happened in the U.S. Congress, where we had three gentlemen come forward, go under oath, willing to put their lives essentially on the line for the truth that they know. And this happens. It's like, not to go down a conspiracy route, but my gosh, it's almost like it was a planned action to go back a couple of steps to kind of unwind everything that's kind of just been done.
Yeah, I don't know if it was kind of the one-upmanship mentality from those behind the Mexican event, but I really found the House Oversight Committee hearing on UAP. I mean, it didn't really, for us that follow this topic and we're well invested in it and we research it, it didn't really reveal anything new for us. There was pretty much, it was stuff that we were aware of or had heard before. But I think for the greater public, for the general populace, I mean, it was a historic event. It's the first time that you've got, you know, two witnesses and a whistleblower in the chair, not getting grilled necessarily, but getting asked questions from both sides of the aisle in a very bipartisan manner. And there was just some truly fascinating things being, discussed in the open forum. I mean, I really applaud the testimony of Ryan Graves and commend David Fravor, because I really think they hit home the nail on the coffin that, look, this is a national security threat and safety of flight risk. If we as aviators, if we can't defend ourselves in that, I mean, Commander Fravor has been the classic example. He was asked questions by Representative Ogles. If the Tic Tac became hostile, and if you had to defend yourself and your fighter jet, your asset, would you have been able to do so? And he said no. And, you know, he hit home that this is a real clear and present national security threat and safety of flight risk. So for me, that's the kind of approach that I've been pursuing in Australia, is getting the Australian government to take this seriously as a national security threat and safety of flight risk. I don't think Australia is even ready to kind of entertain the testimony of David Grush at this point in time, but you know, his testimony was truly fascinating as well, and he was asked some really good questions, particularly AOC. You know, asked him if you could tell us one thing or where to go or who to ask. What would you say? And David Grush was able to say, "Look, I'd be happy to provide you with that information in a enclosed session, behind closed doors." And yeah, he could happily provide lists of cooperative and hostile witnesses with respect to crash retrieval, alleged crash retrieval programs. So, his testimony was our testimony from all three of them I found to be incredibly compelling. And, my hat goes off to David Grush as really being a champion for other whistleblowers out there that are maybe have been reluctant to come forward because they're fearful of reprisals or, being ostracized or put in a position where they're ridiculed. And, you know, we've seen some attempts to discredit David Grush, obviously, since he came out with his testimony at that hearing. But, you know, credit to him. I think he's really done a great job to lead the charge and say to other folks that have information, come forward. I'll be a voice for you if you don't want to come forward. And hopefully it does encourage and inspire other folks to come forward over time. Because if you look at the reporting from folks like Michael Schellenberger and even David Grush at the hearing, saying that over a period of, I think it was 4 years, he interviewed 40 witnesses that had direct knowledge of you know, a crash retrieval program, a reverse engineering program. So, you know, if any of those primary witnesses were to come forward, many of them have gone already and provided protected disclosures to the ICIG, the Intelligence Community Inspector General. So if he can encourage and inspire other folks to come forward and reveal what they know in a protected environment, I think that helps move the conversation forward and adds, you know, more credibility to David Grush's claims as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's depending on the voices that you kind of follow on the internet who are highly influential, there's all reports that, you know, there's 10, 20, 30, 40 people all ready to go forward who have already spoken to AARO about their yep. experiences mm-hmm. within this. So, you know, I think the next year of kind of UFO disclosure can be rather interesting, because depending on how much the government want to let out on this, because, you know, with anything like this, there's the pro side, the con side of it. And we know quite heavily that they really are trying to shut this down as much as they can. And if that happens, we're going to see some tremendous leaks. Like these floodgates they're open, and it's going to get out one way or another. And I really think that any government, any worldwide kind of government here really needs to try be on the right side of history, on the right side of disclosure, because you don't want this to kind of just be this crazy sense of mayhem in the world for people who aren't us, who don't know about this type of stuff. And if that whole world comes crashing down, that, hey, aliens are real, they've been here for X amount of years, they're doing X things, and they're not all nice, you know, that's going to rock a lot of people's worlds.
Yeah, and, you know, and Ross always says the ontological shock that comes with the disclosure or confirmation of there being a non-human intelligence that has perhaps interacted with this planet. But, I mean, even if you look at the historic legislation that's been proposed in a bipartisan fashion in the U.S., you've got, you know, one of those powerful people in the U.S. Congress in politics, you've got Chuck Schumer, who is leading the charge on this historic legislation for a UAP Disclosure Act to be implemented, which would require the president, you know, typically the National Defense Authorization Act gets signed towards the end of each year. You know, Biden has signed the last few in December. And, you know, that would require him, the president, to nominate a UAP disclosure a review board that's modeled after the JFK Assassinations Records, you know, Act or whatever it was called. And they would be charged with reviewing all UAP-related information, deciding if it should continue to be withheld from the general public due to any national security implications. But if there are none, then that information has to be disclosed to the general public. Now, a lot of people have said, well, there are potential challenges around that. I mean, you look at, you know, the JFK assassination was, what, 1963, and how many years have passed, and there are still several thousands of documents that have not yet been disclosed for who knows what reason. If it's national security, fair enough. If not, why haven't those documents been disclosed? So it presents its own sets of challenges with a UAP Disclosure Act that's modeled off the JFK Records, you know, Assassinated Records Act. But at least I think it's a step in the right direction that's going to push the ball down the road even further with respect to getting more information in front of the general public, because that's what we've been wanting for so long. And we've still only seen some pretty crappy videos come out of the Pentagon with respect to, you know, to UAP. I mean, credit to Jeremy Corbell, irrespective of what people think of him. There are obviously people that are current and former members of the armed services that feel like they can trust him with yeah. their information, so they'll reveal information to him. And he's been able to push out information that the Pentagon has said, yes, this is actually, we can verify this as legitimate footage or imagery. So there's people that obviously entrust Jeremy Corbell with their information to put it out there. But, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot come from the Pentagon or the now All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. There's only been dribs and drabs of information that have come from Aro that haven't been all that interesting. So, you know, with now Aro has finally got its public-facing website up and running, and they're, you know, reiterating that their plan is to, you know, publish, you know, their cases when they're able to resolve what they are. You know, hopefully we'll see more visual footage added to their website over time that, you know, the general public can review. But, you know, I think things like legislation like the UAP Disclosure Act just helps move the ball down the road a little bit quicker than decades past.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a lot of people in our kind of niche, in our circle, have known what we've known for so long. And for them, it feels like a very slow crawl to where we're going. But if we look at UFO history over the last 50 years, my God, how far we've come in just in the last couple of years to decades before that. You know, like if we're looking at a curve here, we've gone from just really flat to peaking, and that's going to get exciting in the next couple of years. And, you know, whatever that excitement level that may be that a government supplied level of excitement or leaks, I think it's going to be very telling. But I am rather interested to talk to you about kind of Australia's response to this, because you know, you are kind of like a fighter for truth when it comes to like UFO disclosure, very much so within Australia. And Australia technically kind of has a genuine invested interest on paper for UFOs with the Five Eyes initiative. And now a quick word from our sponsor.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
Yeah, and then what a lot of people may not know is that Australia has almost as long of a history investigating the UAP topic as the United States does. You know, the Royal Australian Air Force and then Department of Supply were charged with investigating UAP, or what they referred to back in the day as unusual aerial sightings, UAS, back in the early 50s. So, you know, not many years after Roswell of 1947, you had Australia taking the UAP topic seriously. And that all came to a halt in 1996 when the Royal Australian Air Force, you know, closed its doors on investigating UAP because they could not apparently find any compelling or other scientific reason to continue to devote resources to the investigation of UAP. Now, fast forward to 2023, and look how different the world is now compared to 1996. And I just don't understand why the Australian Department of Defence and Royal Australian Air Force has got its head buried in the sand all these decades after 1996. You know, they haven't investigated the topic for close to 30 years. They're telling us they haven't engaged in discussions or briefings with the US on UAP. They haven't been privy to any of the classified data housed within the classified reports provided to members of US Congress. And they're saying, move along, folks, there's nothing to see here. There's no appetite whatsoever from the Australian Department of Defence, Royal Australian Air Force. There's no, number one, there's no acknowledgement that there is a UAP topic. And two, there is no appetite from them to formally review their long-held position on UAP that, you know, move along, folks, there's nothing to see here. And like you said, you know, if you were to plot everything out, all the key milestones, just from 2017, you know, the December New York Times articles, how many key milestone events would you have on a timeline just in the last, you know, 5-6 years? I mean, there's been such a flurry of activity in the last 5-6 years that it's almost hard to keep up with. But the Australian government is just still got its head completely buried in the sand on this topic. And to your point, Australia is part of what's called the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. So it's made up of the United States, Canada, the UK, Australia, and New Zealand. And they're charged with essentially sharing what's called signals intelligence. Your information data, your radar information, intelligence that can help, mitigate vulnerabilities and, maximize strengths in terms of preparing for or understanding what our foreign adversaries know, what they don't know, what they're working on. So it's kind of, there's been this long history across the Five Eyes of sharing data and intelligence on topics that are defense related, that are going to help protect each Five Eyes member country. And so of the 31st of May of this year, you had the director of the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, reveal to the world during NASA's public meeting. They had an update meeting with the UAP independent study team. Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick revealed to the world that he had just held his very first Five Eyes forum, a meeting on UAP. So he actually specifically referred to it as a Five Eyes forum, which you would think that that includes the United States, Canada, UK, Australia, and New Zealand. And so a lot of people have been trying to find out as much information as they can since that revelation as to, well, which member countries were represented and who represented them. And so some of the great work that Daniel Otis, a reporter out of Canada, has done, he was able to verify that the Canadian Armed Forces were represented at that Five Eyes forum on UAP. Defence Scoop did some great reporting and was able to verify that the New Zealand Defence Force had a representative based in Washington, D.C. that attended that Five Eyes forum. And I've been able to independently verify that information only really just yesterday. A UAP activist in New Zealand shared with me some official correspondence they received from the New Zealand Defence Force and Minister of Defence in New Zealand that corroborated that information that what Defence Scoop had reported back in June. But then you have the UK that's been completely mum and silent on any potential attendance or participation that it had on the Five Eyes Forum. So I've been trying to chase down, what's Australia's participation or involvement been in that Five Eyes Forum? So I was able to secure confirmation from the Royal Australian Air Force that it did not attend the Five Eyes Forum on UAP. And then you have Senator Wish Wilson, who is the only senator that's really taken this topic seriously and asked pertinent questions in Parliament, pressing those in defence leadership on what is Australia doing about UAP? Should we not be taking this topic more seriously because our US ally and Five Eyes partner is? And so he submitted some questions on notice, which is essentially, for your audience that don't know, Senator Wish Wilson is a participating member of what's called the Senate Estimates. It's kind of he's on the Committee for Defence. It's a hearing essentially where senators scrutinise, where taxpayer dollars go to make sure that, taxpayer money is being properly, invested in programs that are of value, that provide a return on investment for Australia, that are of benefit to Australia and the Australian taxpayer. And he wasn't able to attend the May. There was a Senate Estimates hearing in May. He wasn't able to attend that due to competing priorities in his home state of Tasmania. So he submitted what's called questions on notice. He wasn't at the hearing, so he submitted some questions that he had in writing to the Department of Defense. And one of the questions that he asked, and I'll read it for your audience so I don't get the wording wrong, but the question that he was asked is, did Australia attend the recent Five Eyes meeting held in May 2023? If so, did it attend the US briefing on UAPs? And the Australian Department of Defense, he asked that question in June, so a little after the May Senate estimates. And on the 19th of July, the Australian Department of Defense responded to that question saying Australia did not attend a United States briefing on UAPs. Number one, why the hell not? And number two, well, why was it called a Five Eyes forum, a Five Eyes meeting on UAPs, if not all Five Eyes member countries are represented? So you either have Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick not being entirely accurate or truthful in him positioning this forum as a Five Eyes forum. You know, if it was only four of the Five Eyes there or three of the Five Eyes member countries, it wasn't a Five Eyes forum. Or you have Australia making this broad brushstroke admission that, and this is where it's ambiguous. They use the word Australia. So if you take what they said as it's written, Australia did not attend a United States briefing on UAPs, you would take that statement to mean all of Australia. Australia was not represented at that meeting. Well, is that statement representative of just the Department of Defense's position that a defense did not attend a United States briefing on UAPs, or no one from Australia? Because you've got the intelligence community as well that may quite possibly have been represented at that briefing, but we don't know about it. That's one of the questions that hopefully Senator Wish Wilson presses defense leadership on later this month when there's another Senate estimates hearing scheduled for 25th and 26th of October, where he can seek greater clarity on that response. If Australia did not attend that Five Eyes meeting, one, why not? Were we invited to attend? If so, did we not accept the invitation? If so, why did you not accept the invitation? So there are a whole lot of questions that we need some answers on, so we can get greater clarity as to what Australia's involvement is in the UAP topic. Because unfortunately, to date, it's been very much ignorance is bliss. The Australian Department of Defence and Royal Australian Air Force are just completely ignoring this topic. And when our Five Eyes ally and US, our US ally Five Eyes partner and AUKUS partner has stated and reiterated, I should say, time and time again over the last 2+ years, that UAP represent a clear and present national security threat and safety of flight risk, then that's something that Australia should be taking notice of. Because only in February of this year, you had the Chinese spy balloon and three identified unidentified aerial objects that the US Air Force shot down, and you had the Royal Australian Air Force Chief of Air Force Air Marshal Robert Chipman telling Senator Wish Wilson and Senator Smith that, yeah, we sought information from the US on the Chinese spy balloon and those three objects because we wanted to understand what their source was, their identity, understand if we could, if there were any learnings that we could gain from the US's response to those shoot down events. They'll happily seek information on those events, which represent a national security safety of fly risk, but they won't touch UAP, which represent the same national security threat and safety of fly risk. So there's this big double standard that's being played by the Australian Department of Defence. And that's where I'm hoping Senator Wish Wilson will press quite hard to get some greater clarity on. I know that's an extremely long-winded answer, but hopefully it kind of gives you paints a bit of a picture for you as to where we're pretty much currently at.
No, Matt, it's the perfect answer. And I think it really will catch a lot of people up in Australia, kind of where our government is sitting with this whole UFO topic, because you know, it really seems like it's, and this is for all the non-Australian listeners, like this is a bit of a slang kind of term, but it's almost like a she'll be right kind of mentality. Oh, she'll be right. Yeah. You know, don't worry about the UFOs. Like that's nothing. Like it doesn't mean anything. That's
move along, folks. Yeah, nothing to see here.
It's a US thing. You know, the other blokes will take care of that. You know, we're fine. Which is the complete opposite, because I've spoken to multiple pilots here in Australia who have seen UFOs while flying passenger airlines. That is a major, major concern.
100%. And, you know, it's not just, unfortunately, CASA, which is the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, along with Air Services Australia, they don't have at present any reporting protocols whatsoever for UAP. So if there is a UAP that is picked up by air traffic control, they're not obligated to report it because they don't have any reporting mechanisms. What would happen to the report if it is submitted? It doesn't go anywhere. So you've got, Australia has no reporting mechanisms in place. The Royal Australian Air Force and Australian Department of Defence's current position is if you see a UAP, whether you're a member of the general public or the armed services, call the cops. The cops will look after you. That's basically what they're saying. Call your local law enforcement or reach out to a civilian UFO organization like MUFON or other organizations that are out in Australia. And of it, they credit to MUFON and other organizations. They do great work, but often many of them are under-resourced. they don't have the capabilities that should be in place to have some sensible see-something-say-something reporting mechanism.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's incredibly, incredibly frustrating.
Oh, and the other thing is, like, they don't really have the authority to make any decisions to actually change legislation or anything like that about how this stuff should be treated, because
exactly
these guys.
And look, to your point too, you said that you've got some, you know, commercial pilots that have come forward to you. I mean, I had Ross Coulthard and a couple others on my channel, the Unexplained Rundown, only recently, and Ross, you know, stated that he's had you know, defense personnel come to him, you know, and share their accounts of you know, UAP that they've observed and have not felt comfortable to report to their superiors in fear of, you know, having a blemish, you know, placed on their flight record, you know, out of fear of reprisals. So, you know, you have the Royal Australian Air Force, the Air Marshal, Chief of Air Force Air Marshal Robert Chipman, saying in Senate estimates that, oh, yes, we have, you know, RAF has a very strong reporting culture and encourages pilots to come forward when they, you know, they have safety of flight or airworthiness issues. Well, that's complete BS, because you've got reports, defense personnel contacting an Australian journalist saying that they don't feel comfortable to come forward because they're not going to be taken seriously, or they're going to have a black dot placed against their report card. So that's why I think, you know, folks like Senator Wish Wilson and others need to follow. You know, thank God he's taking the charge on this, but others need to follow his lead, because he's got many, many other issues that his constituents are concerned about. So UAP is not the only thing that Senator Wish Wilson is focusing on, and the more senators and members of parliament that can follow his lead and take the topic seriously and ask these sorts of questions of those that we elect into positions of leadership and authority, and those in defence leadership, it might just help move the needle on the topic within the government.
Yeah, it's really is a shocking state of affairs where Australia kind of stands with this. And, you know, the fact that we could jump on an airline tomorrow and have an extremely close life-threatening encounter with something in the skies, and for that to just be nothing, reported to no one, just disappears to history, and the handful of people who had, you know, potentially a shocking moment there is just disgusting in general. In my opinion,
because I agree. It's and I feel for you know, I have the greatest of respect to the, you know, the brave men and women of the Royal Australian Air Force and that work in the Australian Defence Force, the services. But I'm very critical of those that are in positions of leadership within defence, because I almost feel like there is a degree of there's a disservice that's being placed on the brave men and women of the Australian Defence Force in Australia. Because they're not being afforded sensible see-something, say-something reporting mechanisms. So it almost begs the question, you know, is the Australian Department of Defence and Royal Australian Air Force breaching its duty of care by not looking out for its pilots and aviators who are encountering these things that they can't readily reconcile or identify in the skies that could potentially become a safety of flight risk? I mean, it was only in the House Oversight Committee hearing on UAP back in July that, you know, they're now telling us that, you know, US pilots and aviators have had up to 14 near misses, 14 incidents of near misses with UAP. And, you know, the fact that you have no reporting mechanisms here in Australia, who knows how many incidents there are of near misses or, you know, potential safety of flight incidents, because it's not being reported. There's no one to report those things to. And why would you want to report it if you're a civil, if you're a commercial aviator or you're a pilot? Because there's this fear of stigma and ridicule that's still associated with it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, I got a response from one of these guys, and he basically said, "No, we can't report it. I don't want to report it. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to look like I'm the crazy. It's something that will genuinely ruin their lives if they come forward with this stuff." And that's just so, it's just so disappointing.
So it's sadly, Australia is, you know, I would say a decade at least, or a decade or two behind the United States. You know, this is exactly what the US went through Yeah. They implemented, the Pentagon, to their credit, implemented these sensible say something reporting mechanisms to reduce the stigma associated with reporting UAP. Now pilots are obligated to report instances of UAP. Now, there's still stigma and ridicule and fear of reprisal associated with it, but I think you're starting to get this influx of all these new reports. The case numbers are going up significantly because more and more pilots and aviators are starting to report stuff. And yeah, Ryan Graves at the hearing, the UAP hearing, House Oversight Committee hearing, you know, he stated, you know, his personal belief, anecdotally, that you're still only getting about 5% of people report. So 95% of UAP encounters and sightings are still going unreported. But the fact that you have a small number that are now reporting, you've got RO has got this influx of more than 800 cases that they're now having to identify and resolve. But Australia's at a big fat zero. You know, we don't have any reporting mechanisms in place, and there is no encouragement given to defence personnel, pilots and aviators, to report something that they can't identify in the sky, particularly if it presents a safety of flight risk. And that's a real concern, not just for the brave men and women in the armed services, but for Australia's domain awareness. You know, we have a huge domain awareness gap at the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we can literally be not in the sense of invader, but we can be approached by any direction and not have anything for this. And that's a really scary thought at the end of the day, you know, not to put in the mind of invasion or anything like that in anyone's minds, but it's something that people, I think, should be aware of when it comes to this situation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if we were to have the Chinese spy balloon and those three unidentified aerial objects happen in Australian airspace, I can tell you the response from the Australian Department of Defence and Royal Australian Air Force would be very, very different than what they're saying publicly. But I mean, one of the shootdowns, you know, the Dead Horse Alaska incident is still got a lot of questions about it. I know Ross is doing some good work trying to get it to the bottom of what that event was, because there are indications that it may have been a truly anomalous object that was
something solid came down.
And so if something of that nature was to happen in Australian airspace, what are we going to just call the cops if you see that happen above your farm or, you know, wherever you happen to be living? And it's a completely inadequate and untenable position, I think, that the Australian Department of Defence and RAF is currently holding on to as strongly as it can. Its head has just been buried in the sand for too long, and it needs to really get off its ass and take this topic seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I think everyone listening to this podcast, if, you know, they weren't aware of what the situation was, would definitely be kind of siding with us there, Grant. But, mate, this is a lovely conversation. It's been so awesome to have you on, mate, because you are just this genuine wealth of knowledge when it comes to this, and you can definitely see how passionate, you can hear how passionate you are, because it's someone needs to do it in Australia, and like you're genuinely our dog in the fight for this. And for myself, I'm so internally grateful, because whenever I kind of need an update, I just jump onto your Twitter handle and kind of get my fix there.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, and you know, for a long time, throughout COVID, at the start of COVID, I was kind of just a passive observer. I was just watching what other people were doing to find answers to questions that they had. And I've really been fortunate. I've had an opportunity to learn from a lot of folks. And I continue to try and learn from as many folks as I can, and have developed these really good relationships with folks like Ross Coulthart, Bill Chalker, Keith Basterfield, John Greenwald Jr. You know, learning from them, I mean, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants like those guys, just trying to play my part and now be an active participant in securing answers for not just for my own curiosity, but for others that, you know, other Aussies that I know share the same concerns and valid questions that I have. So that's why I say it's always... it's always validating, and it always provides me with that motivation, inspiration to keep going when I hear those sort of comments of support and people that are really appreciative of the efforts that I'm putting into to find a, you know, find out as much as we can and more information.
Yeah, and you know, I really enjoy talking to people like yourself, because I like to think there's kind of the two sides of the coin, where we've got the people like yourself who are these genuinely incredible kind of researchers who are out there, you know, hunting for the truth. And on the other side of the other side of the coin, there's people like myself and you know, people who do podcasts like mine, who are kind of on the ground and talking to the people who have had these experiences and kind of finding out how it affects them and how it changes their world view. Because I think one thing that's kind of overlooked when it comes to the whole UFO phenomenon is that it's so emotionally tied to people that these things genuinely change people's lives forever. And when these two worlds combine, like in a podcast like this one today, I think it's just a superstar outcome for the world of kind of disclosure, however you look at it.
I 100% agree. And look, I think that one of the big failings of the legacy news media is they're not, in Australia particularly, is they're not covering this topic. And unfortunately, and one of my big gripes is you've got some of the breakfast shows, and I call them out on purpose, you know, Sunrise. They'll cover the UFO topic, but they'll always play the X-Files theme throughout every segment. And they'll just take the piss at every single turn. And so, you know, it's folks like yourself and me and others in Australia that are doing these podcasts and live streams and asking these questions and having people call in and interviewing folks that are invested in the topic. You know, we're in a position where we're more likely to, we're at the forefront of a lot of this information, so we're more likely to be able to put out information faster than the news media can, because they're not invested in the topic. They don't follow it and have the same, they're not exercising their due diligence, unfortunately, at all, whereas we are. We're asking questions, we're wanting to get, you know, follow-up information where there are gaps. So it's my hope that the news media will take notice and take this topic more seriously. And there have been hints of that, little sparks of that in the last couple of months, but it's still quite, you know, broadly across the major commercial networks that they're still just, you know, treating this as a US problem and not seeing it as a UOP, as a global issue that needs Australian involvement as well.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there, mate. It's it's a situation that affects everyone, and I just, for me, I don't understand how this isn't the biggest news story every day.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you know, if we can, you know, the big three questions that us as a species we have, you know, are we alone in the universe? What happens when you die, and is there a God? And if we can answer one of those three big questions, I think it inspires so many you know, people to then look up rather than down at their phones and take you know, have a real hard look at ourselves as a species, as humanity, and think, well, you know, we're not the, as Avi Loeb says, we're not the only kid on the block. You know, if there's other intelligences out there that have been interacting with this planet for millennia, not just since 1947, then that's going to, I think that's going to make us really reassess our place in the universe and how we treat and respect one another. Because unfortunately, as capable as we are as a species of creating wonderful things and showing love and affection, we're also capable of doing some really awful things. And I think that's true with what's happening in the world at the moment. So if ever there was a time for, you know, disclosure or confirmation to happen, I think, you know, now would be a good time, because it might just bring the people of the world together and take a hard look at themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Grant, before I let you go, mate, where can people find you? So, you know, you have the Unexplained Rundown. It's kind of like a show that you kind of put together. Where can people find that?
Yeah, so I'm on, so the Unexplained Rundown do on YouTube. If you just search for either my name, Grant Levac, or the Unexplained Rundown, on YouTube, you'll find the channel. It's also on Spotify, so if you want to listen to the show, if you're a bit more of an audio fan, again, search for The Unexplained Rundown on Spotify. I'm heavily engaged on social media, predominantly on X, or formerly Twitter. So if you just, my handle is just at Grant Levack. So if you just search for Grant Levack in Twitter, your X, you'll find me. And they're pretty much the three big platforms. I have a Facebook account and Instagram, but I don't have a ton of engagement on the UAP topic there. So most of the time you'll see me on engaged in discussions on X and Twitter. So
yeah,
feel free to give the show a follow or get in touch if you're interested to follow my journey, if you've got questions.
Absolutely. And what I'll do is I'll leave links to all those in the show notes as well, because I can truly attest Grant's my go-to guy for UFO news when it comes to Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we were saying off air at the front end, you know, it with everything that's been going on, you know, in the last 6 to 12 months, it's almost feels like a full-time job to just stay up to date with everything that's going on the topic. So there are, you know, there's a small number of folks that I turn to for as a source of valuable information. Obviously, Ross Coulthard is one of them. He does a great vodcast with his partner in crime, Bryce Zabel, on Need to Know. And there are a few others out there as well. Obviously, John Greenwald Jr. does some great FOIA work in the US. Ryan Sprague has a really good, somewhere in the live stream, a once a week stream, where he kind of recaps, summarizes some of the key podcasts from the previous week. So, you know, for folks like us that work day, you know, full time day jobs, and we've got little ones, 3.5-year-old, it's hard to keep up to date with and watch all this great content that comes out with podcasts and live streams. So I often rely on those folks to kind of break it on down for me and give me a sense as to what's going on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.